Welcome to the Digital Horizons podcast, your gateway to the dynamic world of digital marketing. Join us as we engage with industry trailblazers, delving into innovative ideas and cutting-edge strategies to empower you to soar ahead of the ever-shifting digital curve. I'm your host, James Walker. Let's get started. Welcome to the Digital Horizons podcast. I'm your host, James Walker. Today, I'm joined with my guest, Brian Hastings. Brian has been in digital marketing for over 16 years, working in agencies in Brisbane and London, and currently at Nous. He's been there for the last 11 years and as managing director of the company for the past five. Nous is a branding agency, one of Australia's leading branding agencies that helps build brands and engage and connect with their customers. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, James.
So we talked about doing this a little bit. And I guess most of the times that we are talking is normally over beers, but we've been working in the digital marketing space for a lot of years. Brian and I went to uni together about 15, almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, close to 20 years ago.
And I guess we both ended up as directors of marketing companies, but in different spaces. So I thought it'd be really interesting for us to have a conversation and learn more about the branding side of things and how important it is for any online or any kind of marketing strategy overall.
Absolutely. It has been a different path for both of us. Your path started in running your own business and having to figure this digital marketing thing out on your own. And mine sort of progressed through the media side and then into a digital agency and then into a branding agency. But funnily enough, we end up with the same challenges and issues in the same industry. So it's great to chat formally about some of the things we face, but it'd be good to chat a bit about branding and the place it has in a modern campaign approach for clients.
Definitely. And this is something that I was actually talking to our team about recently, based on a podcast episode by Solutions 8, Carson, which we found really interesting, because what they're talking about, digital marketing campaigns, and to be honest, I'd say 90% or more of our campaigns are competing for that bottom of funnel. Someone's already in market looking for a solution or looking to buy right now. And that's where all our budget and campaigns are focusing on. And what we were watching and learning more about the other day was about there's such a big area that we're not even paying attention to. Mm. And by focusing always on the bottom of the funnel, that you get to a point where you can't get any more conversions, but it's also the most expensive because you're competing with all your other competitors there. So if you can tell us a little bit about where you feel branding fits within the overall marketing strategy for brands, both big and small.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been there. We're still there with a lot of our clients where the expectation of the performance campaign activity is so high because it's so accountable, easy to report on. It can typically take the blame for the performance of a business and its brand perception because it's the only thing a lot of clients are doing. It's the only activity they have out there in market. But what we've found, and the typical industry or customer at the bottom of the funnel, we're seeing it, it's about 5 to 10% of your total potential audience. So if all of your efforts are only ever focused on reaching those 5 to 10% of people who are ready today for your product or service, you're leaving a lot of potential audience, potential customers on the table. You're going to get a high conversion rate and a good cost per acquisition on those potential audiences in market today and searching for your product right now, but it's competitive and you're not building out the funnel for new customers in the future. So we kind of separate it between the performance campaigns or a budget allocated to focus on the current audience, those with the current need, showing those signs of searching through Google search or ready to buy now. But what brand campaigns focus on is building the brand in those future audiences, that other 95% of people who might not be ready today or might not have the need right now, but they're going to in the next week, month, 6 months, depending on your product, category or industry. The efforts of branding can help massively in filling that funnel. So when it is time for those people to come into market, you don't have to rely on that heavily competitive performance activity to capture them in the moment all the time. So it's really important. It is also really difficult to convince clients to try and split some budget away to that future investment in your future audiences.
Yeah. So I guess how are you approaching that then? If you're talking to a new client who's just come on board and you're presenting, hey, you need to be doing this, but you're not going to see a return on this immediately. How are you presenting what kind of budget split should be allocated? What should they be putting into brand? What kind of, I guess, length of time are they probably going to be expecting? I know it's probably going to be different for all industries, but you're looking at it as an investment as opposed to you're going to see a return on that, aren't you?
It's tough. We don't always manage to get our clients to think in this way because they've got bosses to answer to. They've got budgets that they have to be accountable for. And businesses have gotten used to over the last 5-10 years, a conversion rate or a cost per acquisition for their budgets. Typically, the conversation is made easier when it's visible that their brand terms are declining and the costs to get those, you know, bottom of funnel audiences are increasing. They're becoming a slave almost to Google and Facebook or Google and Meta. And it's that loss of control of their marketing budget to the competitiveness of the market that drives the clients to ask us, what else can we do? Why are we always at the whim of the market? That's when the conversation can start. We use things like their declining brand interest in organic search and paid search on the brand campaigns to show them if this continues declining, we're going to have to fight out in the prospect market for people searching for your specific product, not your brand. Wouldn't it be great if people think of you first and your brand first instead of the need that you solve? In terms of allocating a budget, there's two different ways you can look at it. We typically start with a 60-40 split. 60% to the campaign activity, 40% to the brand building activity. Then there's the defining of what their total budget should be. From effective campaign studies we've seen, the marketing and media budget should be defined based off where you're sitting in market for your share of voice of how much brand and marketing activity you're spending was compared to the other competitors in market and aligned with your market share. So,
and how do you find these numbers out? What is a software or is it platforms that you're using to measure this? What is the measurement that you're getting to this point?
It's different for different industries. For example, we've got a client in the home building industry. The market share is easily reported on because the building industry reports the monthly numbers of home build contracts by region. But getting the share of voice, how much are they spending in market compared to every other builder in Southeast Queensland is a lot more difficult. It becomes easier when you're working on really large brands because they can afford those media listening or media reporting tools, which aren't perfectly accurate, but they give an indicator. We have typically, for some clients who don't have access to the Nielsen data around what their competitors are spending, we can lean on the media partners who do have access to that data and say, well, for this client, they would like to see where they're sitting in market and what media spend their competitors are sitting at, not just in your platform, but across all platforms. Approximately 1% of the industry in terms of share of voice, but your brand is currently at 4 or 5% of market share. You really have to lift your share of voice to at least match your market share. And if you want to grow that market share, you have to get into what we call an excess share of voice. You have to buy more share of voice to grow your market share from, say, 4% to 6%. So it doesn't always work out that way. You know, there's some clients in the FMCG space where we report those numbers to, and that budget might be 5, 6, 7 times higher than what they've got allocated, and it's kind of laughed off. So we have to do what we can with what we've got. But we're always reporting back on what the industry is doing and the share of voice of the market. It's obviously, it gets very difficult when trying to calculate the performance media campaign activity. Some of these tools like Nielsen's don't report on that very well.
So Brian, 5 years in as managing director of NAOS, what do you feel has been the biggest success? And that period's taken you through COVID, which after we know a lot of agencies had a strong period, but the market sort of turning down over the last year or so. What do you feel has been your biggest success? We'll get into what you feel is the biggest challenge.
Sure. I think the culture of the business is something I'm the most proud of at this point in time. It was not easy to work on the culture of the business as a specific focus, but it is something that's transformed over the years since I've worked there. And as I took over the managing director role, something that I saw as a almost difficult lever to pull or change or shift when you're focusing on how people enjoy their jobs and the environment. It's been something that has taken a lot of effort, especially during this period of difficulty in finding and maintaining good talent in the business. That is an area I'm really proud of. We've managed to implement the right benefits with focus on individuals, their development, the environment and work flexibility, gotten the culture to a place I'm really proud of. And when we do sort of anonymous survey results as to how people, you know, would recommend Nous as a place to work, it's at the highest it's ever been. We've got a really, really high employee NPS score, higher than any of the big brand agencies. So that's something that I see as a really great success.
That's it. I mean, it's an area of focus for us as well. And I think creating an environment where you're wanting to turn up every day, just as much as you want all your team to turn up every day, it's so key to making the business a success.
And you can always tell if it's not right or things aren't working well, because you get that little niggle in your belly when you have to go into work. You can sense it when it's off and when things need to be worked on. But we found not just implementing benefits that match other companies, but empowering the team with the skill set to show up to work. So to be accountable, to be bold and gutsy and stand up for the right thing, to really listen and be curious. Those aren't skills that you can just say, we want you to be like this. We have invested in training our team so that they can catch themselves if they're blocking something or bringing a negative attitude to the office, and work on themselves and bring a better version of themselves to the team. Setting those standards of what we expect for each other has helped people feel like it's okay to call out bad behavior or understand what the business expects as a base level for how we should interact with each other. And with that, people feel safer and they feel more comfortable that this is what we're looking for as a business.
But it also sets a performance standard as well, because you won't accept underperformance. And I know as soon as they start seeing someone else isn't living up to the culture and the performance levels that they're all holding themselves to that standard, they sort of will call it out. And they'll be like, hey, this person's not really fitting, because they know what they expect from themselves and they're going to let the team down because they work so collaboratively as well. I also think that being that our industry, our people are so in demand.
Yes.
Like at the moment, digital marketers, it's such a in-demand skill set because it's businesses, well, every business needs it. By creating a culture an environment where they love coming to work and feel like they're doing good quality work, it's going to help with that retention piece.
Absolutely. Your team will know who's performing and who isn't, and the responsibility is on the leadership team to identify that and either help them develop or have a plan to move them on. It's imperative that you're holding everyone to the same standard of work. Otherwise, it will feel like, well, why do I have to work at this level when a lower level is accepted? That's been massively key. And then on the flip side of that is a brilliant jerk is not something we look for either. So someone who's, you know, acts like they're irreplaceable, someone who treats people like they're the smartest in the room all the time, it's not worth it. It's not worth having those people who see themselves as the best of the best and forget the rest. So
And identifying that quick is key. We've had situations where we have had the wrong person and no one wanted to turn up to work anymore because of that one person, and they've left and everything's back to, hey, this is cool again.
Yeah, that sigh of relief, and you don't realize how quickly things feel better once that toxicity has been
100%.
Removed. Yeah.
Challenges. What do you feel has been the biggest challenge you've gone through as recent years?
You know, not to be a cop-out, but the challenge for the first 3 years of managing director was that culture piece. It wasn't just easy win after win after win. It almost got worse before it got better. And it can feel like you're trying things and failing constantly, and you're trying to get your team and everyone to see the path ahead and rally together. But if the culture has been built a certain way for so long, it can almost feel like to the wider team, what's the point? There's no point in trying to change it. This is just the way it is here. That has been a huge challenge. And then during the sort of point of huge demand for people in our industry, the turnover of staff during this period where we had all these things up and running, the culture was starting to get to a point I was comfortable with, but then the wave of incredible offers started coming in via recruiters and LinkedIn, and it was really difficult to hold up, you know, but this is a great place to work, you know, we're building out these benefits and we're supporting you in this way. That sometimes just can't compete with a client-side role that is $20,000 or $30,000 more than we can fund for that role, with a 9-day fortnight and full-time work from home flexibility when that hasn't been something that's the industry has offered before. And that was a sort of a short period. And it's difficult to say to people in the moment, when these companies need to scale, they'll scale in this way, but also when they need to cut back, they'll cut back quickly too. We've seen that some of our team have moved on to those offers and not enjoy that role, and that's sometimes helpful for the rest of the team to see as well.
Well, there's a reason why the salaries are so inflated. It's because they've got to pay that to get people to move into these roles. Yes. Because it's not always going to be the most enjoyable role. I feel that culture may not be the key focus, as opposed to an agency where we know that it has to be business's success.
It's sometimes an indicator, if it's that far above market, how desperate are they to fill a team, and what's the reason for that team to be so lacking in resource in the first place? We found that with both competitor agencies providing offers well over and above what's feasible, and that's kind of trailed off, as well as some client-side brands.
I didn't mean to get all into culture and team stuff. We've sort of got delved into that, but I think it's really, really important to understand on agency side. So I guess we get into the branding side of things. So when we're talking about, all right, there's this budget split, we're thinking 60-40 would be awesome if the businesses are willing or can afford to do that. But where are you finding the best channels are to increase brand, to run these brand campaigns?
Yeah, if the client is comfortable with digital, they're probably already in some great channels for brand activity, but they're probably being utilized for performance-based ad objectives. So Meta, for instance, is easy to separate an objective from the performance click or lead generation conversion campaigns and create a better ad, something that is engaging and not so logical. Buy this, here's why, here's all the product benefits, and create a engaging, entertaining brand ad. Use it in that channel. Use, you know, whether it be stories or video format. But it's important not to give it the same expectations as your performance campaigns. So start with Meta, Instagram and Facebook, and split off a portion of your budget. Invest in some creative that is different to your time to buy now, impulse buy type ad creative. You still have to keep that for your performance activity, but generate some great creative. Use those channels as your first trial. But what we do find is if they're dipping a toe into branding, it will always fail. You can't just dip a toe in and say, oh, we tried 40% of our budget on brand campaigns in Meta for a month and it just didn't get the same conversions as the... Of course, it's not going to get the same conversions. It has to be a strategy that the marketing team and the business commits to. You rely on your agency to help support that. It's not your agency trying to portion off a part of your budget that isn't accountable. If you're going to build awareness, engagement, and alignment with your ideal audience, with your brand, it's not going to happen at that last point of their research before they come through. It's going to happen earlier. So there has to be a commitment to that brand activity. And that means there has to be an adequate budget and a commitment to funding quality creative. The duration of the brand activity, a month is not enough. 3 months is almost not enough. You push at least 4 to 6 months of brand activity to support your performance activity before you can start looking back at how is that, as a blended cost per acquisition for everything we're doing, how has that started to improve?
So if you're looking at, all right, cool, we have dedicated a budget, 40% of our budget, we've gone into it for a year, we've picked our channels and we've got good creative. We're looking back on that year. How are we measuring that success?
Yeah, it has to come back to total market share if you can track that in your industry. Yeah. If you can't, it's total new clients and total revenue. There has to be a business-related metric that benefits it over time.
Yeah, I imagine also looking at Search Console and branded search, like that's going to be a clear KPI that you could be looking at,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. The rest of the business is going to go, that's great, but we didn't get as much revenue at the end of the day. When we spent this all in performance, we got the performance ads generated this much revenue. So there has to be trust between the agency and the client to look at the total revenue. There is going to be more inbound calls, more direct traffic, organic traffic on brand terms. There's going to be existing or past clients that are reminded about the brand and potentially come back. So it's going to have an impact on other areas of conversion. But importantly, it's going to help the performance campaigns. So the CPCs should come down. People are going to be more interested in picking your brand when they see three competitor ads side by side in search. There's going to be a higher conversion rate on site from visit to inquiry. If you are an inquiry-based business or if it's e-com, it's going to be improved conversion rate to sale, because they're already aligned with your brand prior to clicking that performance ad or coming through to convert on that lead ad. It can't be judged, though, after one channel and 1 month. And that's where we find the biggest challenge is we're going to try this brand addition to your performance campaigns, but you really got to commit to 6-8 months of activity. And you can't just use your performance ads for the brand campaign. So let's invest in this brand creative. Coming back to the question, which is which channels? When we look for effective brand campaigns, we want to see what we call creative commitment. That means a commitment to the quality of the creative, a commitment to the duration of the brand activity, 3, 4, 5 months or more, and a commitment to running it across multiple channels, not just the performance channels. So that can mean shifting out of your typical digital channels as well, reinforcing your video campaign activity, whether it be YouTube or Meta or TikTok campaign activity, with some out of home. Maybe there's local area marketing. If you're a small or localized business, pick some outdoor that is nearby or relevant to you. Cinema-based advertising works really well. Not every brand is capable of a big national traditional campaign. It isn't that expensive to buy localized and targeted outdoor or retail-based outdoor anymore.
That's because it's always flicking over, right? Like you're not buying a billboard that's set constantly for a month period.
That's correct. When they switch from static to one ad every 10 seconds or one ad every 6 seconds, they didn't reduce the cost, but it's still possible to buy a reduced amount of locations or sites to reinforce your digital campaign. When there is that spread from digital only that to include some traditional activity, the impact of the brand benefit is exponential. So you'll get a better performance if you peel some digital activity off to some local area marketing and outdoor to reinforce your digital campaign activity. Now, we understand that doesn't work with every type of brand. If you're an e-com brand that can sell nationally or internationally, it would be too costly to try to reach all capital cities on a national level. That's where branding via digital marketing really comes into its own. But if you're a local service-based business, and even if it's B2B, you can still leverage the digital activity that you're already running with some traditional activity to get that multiplication factor of your brand message. The intent is that people or build a good frequency of seeing your message in digital channels, and then have that reinforced in real life. Or Walker Hill Digital might be localized to this area. People see the building on some outdoor sites, but then they're getting hammered with your TikTok activity.
I've been meaning to inquire about some billboard stuff around here, because I'm sure people see our sign on the top of the building and they've got no idea what we do. So I guess a localized brand awareness campaign is really going to help with that recognition.
And I get it. We don't always practice what we preach at now. So we're like the mechanic's car, the last one to get worked on. But it is an area where we are seeing that multiplication of the brand message. The reach not only multiplies, but the impact of the message of the individual who's seen it, both in digital and in traditional.
It depends on your audience as well, though, right? Like being that, like for our business, we're a B2B business. Mm. Majority of your outdoor branding is B2C because there's a larger audience that's out there in front of you. So I guess it's also trying to work out, well, if I'm going to reach a mass volume of people in this area, how many of them are actually going to be my customer? Yeah.
And that's, I think, the big limiting factor for brands to go ahead with this brand activity is the acceptance of wastage of your audience. We've gotten so comfortable with, I'm going to laser focus in on exactly the perfect audience in my performance campaign. But with brand activity, you have to sort of throw out some of your marketing intuition a little bit and accept a wider ranging audience. It's okay to reach someone who may refer your brand to someone who needs it. B2B, it's especially important to consider brand because making a decision around who you're going to partner with when it's your job to choose a supplier for your business, or say you're in marketing and you're choosing an agency, that's a huge commitment that's going to change the way you're perceived in your workplace. It's an emotional and serious decision that a human who works in a business has to make when they're picking a B2B supplier. We tend to think of emotional branding and brand type advertising for cars and consumer electronics and, you know, food brands, but it's really easy to make a call on which toothpaste you're going to get. And if you don't like it, you just get a different one the next time. The stakes aren't high in that decision. But in B2B advertising, a good gut feeling about a brand that comes from a place you're not sure where it's coming from is way more important in that space, because people aren't going to pick based off just clear logic. They're going to pick based off what they feel is maybe a good feeling or a level of trust. And I'm sorry to say that comes from brand development, not just from their keen eye in judging a company.
That's it, man. There's nothing better when you're sitting, and from our experience, when we're sitting in a room and a potential client's come to us and they're already sold before they walk in the door. That's because they've seen all of our organic content. They've seen our ads, and most of our ads are definitely bottom of funnel. But we are really had a big focus over the last 12 months on generating content, which is not sales related. It's more about offering value, kind of like this podcast. We've found that we're getting in front of people in a branded way, even though we're not amplifying with too much budget behind it, it is still reaching our target audience. So when they're walking into the room, they understand that we really know our shit and they've already made a decision on whether they want to work with us or not.
Yeah, your brand and performance marketing has done to them what they want you to do for them. Right. When someone comes in and the proposal stage is just a formality, they want what we have to offer. They like the way that we've structured our work or the way we present ourselves, or they think they've heard about us from others, but really it's what they've seen in market about Nouse that really makes that difference. It will convince people in your business, say in the sales team, that they're doing a good job. Their potential clients and customers are coming in already predisposed, wanting to work with your brands, having you in the top one or two businesses they want to work with.
Well, so we've been talking about business branding. So what about personal branding in relation to this? So I think that you hear a lot of people about people buy from people, not businesses, and stuff like that. Where do you think that building for small businesses, especially, where incorporating their own personal brand into the marketing or into the branding for the business lies?
I think it's a business-specific and brand-specific decision whether a personal brand is going to work better than a faceless brand. Service-based businesses that require a high level of trust and transparency, like lawyers, accountants, even advertising agencies, investment, you know, services, they're really where you're going to want to get a feel for who the person is that you're going to be working with. But then there's a level of confidence once those businesses get over a certain size where it can't just rely on the individual. You know, what if that person, that personal brand is that the main brand is built around, decides to retire or decides to move on to a different organization? Yeah. So that's the risk brands run if they are focused only on that personal brand driving traffic into the business and not Nouse as a brand or Walker Hill Digital as a brand. It needs to stand on its own two feet, regardless of who you speak to. The way Walker Hill Digital operates, they're going to have highly trained professional team. Whoever you get is going to be able to deliver. The personal brand, I think, is still really helpful for showing that there's real people who care on the other side of this business. If you were to come in, it might make it a little bit easier to pick up the phone and speak to somebody. But that sort of personal brand activity, I think this podcast or speaking at events can introduce individuals from a brand to others based on trust. They're not necessarily coming to Nous in that framework. If they've seen me present at an event, they want to talk to Brian Hastings. It's difficult to scale that unless you're doing TikToks. But I think it's the brand's responsibility to also be working on its own brand, not just the specialists within it.
Final question for today. I know you've got a lot going on today, so yeah, sort of in and out, but AI, how do you feel that is going to, have you got any thoughts at this stage? I know that it's a lot of talk around, especially on the performance marketing side of things, being how integrated it's becoming in the platforms we're running our campaigns on. Where are you seeing anything impacting at the moment, or where do you foresee it having an impact within branding?
Look, there's a lot of AI programmatic advertising networks and platforms offering brand advertising or video pre-roll using programmatic AI-driven technology to choose the right audiences based off their online behaviors or their, you know, look-alike factors to people who have converted. So taking that out of platforms like just Facebook and the Google Display Network and serving video creative wherever the ideal audience is. But with the shifting, you know, pixel policies and rules, that kind of targeting or that kind of information isn't as available to those platforms anymore. We can't buy someone who looks like this or has looked at this kind of online content, can't look into their cookie history anymore and then programmatically buy the right type of person based on what they've been looking at online. This is an area where AI is not becoming as helpful anymore, and you're having to go back to buying video based off contextual targeting and more broader targets. But we find that typically works well anyway, because it's cheaper to buy at a broader target and the outcome is sometimes better to reach a larger audience for a cheaper rate than trying to get too clever and laser focus in on a specific audience at a higher cost for branding. So that's the one area where we were seeing helping. With creativity, building the brand creative, that's still an area where AI tools are really only helping with our agency's productivity, not necessarily ideation or the development of the creative itself. It's not there yet, and I have no doubts that it's going to be going in, you know, leaps and bounds in the coming months and years. You know, if we need a particular shot for a creative campaign, that AI-driven tools will be able to help make that shot a reality for cheaper. But at the moment, it's not quite there yet.
I'm so keen on trialing as many tools as I can, because as I said, like being able to become more efficient and within what you're doing in the day-to-day, like I found a tool, Munch, for podcast editing. And so pretty much the idea was we should upload the whole video of this, what we're doing right now, into it. It's then going to spit out 30 different short-form clips that you can push a button and it's going to shoot it out to Shorts and to TikTok and wherever else.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And we gave it a try and I'm like, all these clips are halfway through a point. And so there was not a single one. I went through 11 that they sent me. I'm like, it's like we're having a conversation here, but it just started halfway through. And I'm like, what's the point? Now I have to go back and send it to our editor to edit it all out anyway. So I think it's exciting to see the progress, but a lot of the tools are just being thrown out into the market and they're not actually good enough to do what they're aiming to do yet.
Yeah. And it's easy to romanticize it and think if it's AI driven, it'll just give me a bunch of Simon Sinek quality quotes from this podcast that cut perfectly. And I've seen an ad for a similar tool that cuts the gaps out of the podcast and then two, takes these key clips that you can use in social posts. And until you told me you trialed it, I thought, wow, that sounds amazing.
It looks great on paper, but the reality is I just don't, maybe we're just using it wrong. We've only trialed it for one video so far, but we'll continue trialing it as well. Like I don't want to just be like, all right, cool. It's not like, yeah, we'll keep trialing these things, because I feel like the more efficient we become at our job, we need to, because it's more value can add.
Yeah, well, you know, and that, not to say that AI isn't a part of what we're doing on a daily basis, like those productivity tools, but also image generation via our Adobe library access. Instead of just picking from what's available, you can provide prompts and create something. Yeah. And that works in very specific niche cases. One of our clients, we're developing their brand packaging for veterinary medicines and supplies and dog washes and things like that. On one of the ranges of sort of an arthritis powder, they wanted different varieties of large dog, small dog, and cats. Instead of doing a very expensive shoot of these animals, we just generated the perfect Labrador, the perfect small dog, the perfect cats. They had that AI illustrative look, but sometimes a specific breed can be contentious. Like people think, oh, that's not a good Labrador, or that's not a perfect one. Because it's generated from AI, it kind of removes any of that and just gives them a nice quality dog without the need of a shoot that would have been four or five times the price. And that's not something we specifically generate a lot of profit margin out of. We need to find the right animal photographer. We need to organize the shoot day and get the talent and get all the animals. And they were used for mock-up purposes, and the client liked them so much, they're going to end up in the end product. Because it's through Adobe as well, the licensing issue isn't an issue. Yeah. So, you know, they provide it.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time today. Branding is something that we don't focus on enough, and I think that a lot of businesses don't, and there's always that thing, it's like, oh no, we don't have the budget for it, that's for the big brands. But then it's like, well, they're the big brands because they've been doing the branding sort of thing. Yeah, and so it's kind of like trying to get that right mix to become the more well-known brand within your industry.